Hey, listeners, this is Janine and
Stephanie,
and we're here on our second edition of the Course of Course podcast. Today, we have a very exciting show for you. We're going to talk about some of the books by Gary Renard, mostly Disappearance of the Universe. I'd like to talk about what it was like when I first came to the Disappearance of the Universe. On the first podcast, I discussed a little about how Gary Renard had met my sister at a stoplight, and they had a little conversation, and then my sister told me about Gary, and it was probably a year later, I went ahead and downloaded his first book, which is Disappearance of the Universe from Amazon. And at that moment, probably two chapters in, I thought I was going to go insane because the book itself really caused a lot of cognitive dissonance for me. How about you, Stephanie? What was your first impressions of the book?
So
I started reading the book in August. You picked it up, I think, in November.
Yes.
Right. So I'm assuming that you picked it up. I probably had said, oh my God, you have to read this book. It's mind blowing.
Exactly.
So
and it blew my mind. I mean, I'm used to channeled material. Having read lots of books, Artin and Persa, what they were saying, though, the information, I feel, was way different than anything else I've ever read.
The thing about this book, it wasn't pure channel material because he basically wrote it after the fact. So Artin and Persa, for those readers who I'm assuming have heard this, but we also were amazed at an Irvine conference we went to how many hadn't read the book before. These were two, what would you call them? I wouldn't even call them aliens. I would call
Ascended Masters?
Ascended Masters, visitors from the future. They showed up in Gary's apartment on his sofa one night, which sounds kind of mind-blowing in itself. And then he ends up having many conversations with them over a few years, and he writes this book, Disappearance of the Universe. And I believe it was first published in 2003. I'll have to double-check that. And we, thinking that we know everything about the spiritual world, really hadn't even heard of the book.
It took until 2013.
Exactly, we're a little slow. But then again, I don't know if we were really in the market for spiritual books. We'd read so many, and I'm not speaking for you, but I felt like, oh, well, you know, here's another one. I've already read them. They're all kind of the same, but this was so not the same.
Yeah, it was the dictionary thesaurus to the Course in Miracles. It was the keys to the kingdom kind of thing.
That's a really good point. I think it was, not to call it a gateway drug, but we had both talked about in the first podcast the struggles we had with the Course in Miracles when it was first introduced to us. And we had some introduction through the Marianne Williamson books because she was basically basing it on the Course in Miracles. They were easy to get and understand, but this one, for me, hit me across the head.
Yeah, I think because it talked about things like the separation from God, and guilt and attack and, you know, being the victim and the victimizer.
It was the first time that, even though I'd read the Marianne books before, it was the first time I really, really understood the whole concept of guilt. Before, I would read it, but I didn't take it in. I read Gary's and I took it in.
Yeah, I think that the opening paragraph, which I probably should have memorized, but I don't, to the course about, you know, none of this is real and none of it's unreal or something like that, it was too confusing. Mm-hmm. But it was through DU that I understood what that meant.
Right.
Which is, you know, that none of this is real. What's real is heaven.
What also I found a little more engaging in this book, and one of the reasons why I stuck with it and really devoured it, because it read like just some guy having a conversation with two people that may or may not be from the future. The reveal doesn't come until the very end, but essentially, I felt like this is an easy-to-embrace book. It didn't feel like a spiritual, haughty person talking down to me. This is the way you should do it, and imposing that kind of spiritualness.
Well, the fact that he was never went to college, he played in a band for years, right. He had back problems, he had parent issues. I mean, he worked through stuff.
Way more relatable, I think, than some of the other books that we've read.
Yeah, I could see myself in that, even though his are silly or whatever.
I had read today that humor is the fastest way between two people, which I love. So I appreciate the fact that he does have humor. Moments in the books, it does allow us to go, okay, I can breathe a little because there's so much going on and so much to comprehend. It was nice to have those little breaks.
Definitely. It was crafted well. Yeah.
But going back to what you said before, I think Gary in this book was so much more approachable in the fact that, oh yeah, you don't have to be perfect to have a Ascended Master show up on your couch. You don't have to live this absolutely perfect life.
And given who he was in some other experiences, being the right-hand man to Jesus.
Right.
Often being confused as his twin brother. And writing the Book of Thomas. I mean, the guy is totally awesome.
So for those listeners who haven't read the Gary books, what Stephanie's talking about, I think in book two, possibly.
In book one.
It was in book one, too. Mm-hmm. Gary had mentioned that Art and Persa had shown him who he was in previous lifetimes or concurrent lifetimes, depending how you want to see the time frame. And one of those lifetimes was extremely significant. He was Jesus's best friend. He also was who we know now as St. Thomas. Also, historically, I think he was referred to as Doubting Thomas.
Hmm.
He had a lot of different, not true, of course, that's how history is. Mm-hmm. But Gary does walk through what it was like being friends with Jesus and what it was like being around Jesus. I mean, you don't get too many opportunities to hear this kind of stuff. I understand anyone listening to this probably thinks this is absolutely insane. I get that. But everything else in my life seems kind of insane, too.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have a Jesus story wrapped around it, that's all.
Well, when you can suspend or expand the mind to get that all of this is happening at once, or that the mind is creating these different lifetimes and stories that evolve around each other as characters from lifetime to lifetime to try and learn whatever it is, you know, to wake up and remember. I don't remember what my point was, but
I'm sure it's there somewhere.
Just that it wasn't hard for me to accept the two ascended masters showed up in his living room, or that he lived that lifetime. And heck, we could have been around that same group of people.
We probably were. I vote I was probably a harlot.
Okay.
I'm all for that. One of the things I think I talked to you about recently, I was on the internet. You know how, like, anybody has a voice on the internet? There was that old quote, nobody knows you're a dog on the internet.
Okay.
And people were saying, well, really, is our Art and Persa real? And it just makes me laugh every time I read it. Like, you're totally missing the point, person.
Yes.
Of course they're not real. None of us are.
Yes.
But they're real in the sense that they are a vehicle in which we can understand better some of these concepts that really are kind of in the Course of Miracles, but a little buried and a little obfuscated.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that easy to be able to take it in. Gary's book allowed us to go, oh, okay, now I see the Course of Miracles for what it is. I'm going to go back and read it. I'm going to start doing these lessons. If it wasn't for Gary's book, I can honestly say I doubt I would have done it.
Agreed.
There are other books out there that talk about the Course, but they didn't have the hook that this one did.
Yeah, he just explained it in a way that made sense to me.
I think, and this is kind of a nod to whoever did this. I'm not sure if it was Hay House or if it was his first publisher. But this book is on audio, and it's been huge for us because we can just play it in our car when we take long journeys and listen to it over and over again. I know I've listened to it probably 20, 30 times, easy.
Yeah, on the way to work, on the way home from work, on the way to lunch, on the way back from lunch.
So this is a note to Hay House, the last two books of Gary's. Could you please put those on audio?
Yes, please. And the full book would be nice because
right.
The audio now is 6 hours and it's not the whole DU book.
One of the things I like about hearing it in audio, it does give you a different perspective. I've read the book on my Kindle a number of times, but hearing those voices really does trigger certain things. I also find it fascinating that every time I re-listen to it, I pick up something else.
Yes, and the voices stay with me, so they help ground the material when I am reading it off
right.
the page.
And the voice of Artin is also the host of Gary's podcast, so I do hear that a lot.
I haven't listened to any of the podcasts, so.
Well, people will listen to this one.
Yes,
that's a good thing. I'm a big fan of podcasts, obviously, which is why we're doing one of these. But I think podcasts, and there's a huge community of people who are doing it. You know, hats off to all you guys. I think it's amazing. The more material we can get out there, I think it does help. We have said this before. We're novices in the grand scheme of things. Mm-hmm. A lot of these people have been around the course or been doing the course for 20, 30, 40 years. We've been doing it since 2013.
For a year.
Yeah. Not that I don't think that you have to put in that kind of time, but, you know, it's all still new to us. And one of the reasons we wanted to do this podcast is maybe reach out to those who are just getting into it and are looking for more material and want to hear kind of like how we as novices are applying the course in real life.
Yes, I like the lessons in the course because it helps anchor the this is real or not real. I mean, some of those early lessons where it seemed kind of silly, you know, this pencil is not real.
This table is not real.
Everything is, you're driving down the road to work. This billboard's not real. These people aren't real.
Your thoughts aren't real.
Everything's not real.
Mm-hmm.
But it does show just how crazy the ego makes most of our experience, probably, you know, 90% whatever, and ugly, but 10% is just beautiful enough to keep us going.
Right.
And to know that most of that is not real is great, because I'd rather have 100% of ecstasy in heaven over any day down here.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
Just to be totally candid, I'm not really great at the lessons. I'm not saying I'm not doing them, but, you know, I'm a failed creature in the sense that I will read them and go, oh, okay. And then I get distracted by life. I mean, that's the real reality, at least for me. They are a part of my life, but they have not been completely ingrained in my life.
Mm-hmm. I find that the lessons in reading the books and even listening to the audiobooks, they all segue off each other. And sometimes there's more intense moments where everything's kind of coming together and it's an aha moment. And other times it's just more kind of flat.
One of the things about the lessons for me is early on, probably lessons, I don't know, once I got into the 60s, 60s, 70s, 80s, especially when you get to the review week, it's like that week is just review these. I felt like I was obligated, I guess, every day. So I had to really get back into that mindset of nobody's making you do this. You know, it's voluntarily. So it's voluntary. So you don't have to worry about whether you're doing it or not. And then, of course, I would start feeling guilty if I didn't do them.
Mm-hmm.
The whole guilt that comes back up.
Yeah, or am I doing it right? Mm-hmm. Or am I doing it enough? Because some of them are pretty tough and they ask you to focus every 30 minutes or every hour even.
And I find that I'm an amazing student on the weekends, but as soon as I get into work, I become the worst student on the planet. So, you know, this calm, you know, weekend time where I'm not affected by stresses, I guess, of the business world kind of go away Monday through Friday. So that's my struggle, trying to get back to the course, even though so much chaos is going around me.
I think the audiobook helps me during the week because I can get grounded before I even get into the office by listening to it.
Let's talk about the audio of the course itself.
Sure.
So we have listened to that a million times.
Yes.
And we, I don't know about you, but I was kind of like slightly annoyed by the gentleman who was voicing it. And now I think we both love him like he's our friend.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've heard him so many times.
I do love him. I mean, when I read the text, I hear his voice.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like when I read Disappearance of the Universe, I hear those three, Artin, Persa, and Gary's voice.
Yes.
Which I do like. I mean, that's one of the nice things about audio. Again, Hay House.
Mm-hmm.
If you can put those on audio.
Let's put two and three so we can listen to them over and over.
We will buy them.
And give them as gifts.
It's hard to give an audio as a gift unless we buy the CD, DVD.
They just need to have iTunes or, you know, and then listen to it through
their
car.
They need to wake up. It's 2014. That's almost right. 2015.
Yep.
I'm sure people are going to listen to this in 2015 and go, well, they're so out of date. This stuff has been available forever now.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So, Disappearance of the Universe, I want to talk about Artin and Persa.
Okay.
So, Persa is the female version of Gary, and Artin is the male version of his current wife, Cindy. So, Artin and Persa, when they were first introduced to Gary, weren't really revealed as to who they are, which was lovely because it was a nice reveal at the end. They both would bring him lessons and kind of eye-opening concepts for him to mull over. And he also was going through his own dark night of the soul during this period. I think he was on the East Coast in Vermont or Massachusetts or someplace like that.
Maine.
You know, and he was dealing with his own interpersonal dramas. So it's interesting that these two travelers visited him during this time period. I'm always fascinated by why then and why him.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I think about it, it could have been anybody. He just happened to be open to these two. And although it seems really bizarre that two travelers, two people in the future, showed up on his couch and were in the flesh, as normal as anyone else. And I think he described them as just wearing normal clothes, contemporary clothing. Mm-hmm. So it really kind of drove home toward the end of the book that we really, even though we seem more solid, we're not. It's just, this is all an illusion, which is very hard to grasp, especially for people who are newer to this concept. We've been around spirituality for a while. But if somebody would come up to me and I didn't have that kind of background, and they said, oh no, you know, your body isn't real. It's an illusion, even though we bleed and we feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
Once you go, oh, okay, now I sort of get it, then you slowly start to open up to the concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's also not an easy one to explain, which I just proven.
Yeah, at some point I feel, though, that my mind has switched. It has switched to the spirit side versus the ego side. Now, even though 90% is probably still spent in ego, I feel like I am able to call upon spirit or come from spirit or look with the spirit point of view more than a year ago before I started this material. And I think that's kind of the crux of everything, is doing daily life in every moment with spirit as much as possible, so that we can awaken in heaven.
We aren't really talking about the Alex Marchand books yet, but we will get to them. But I do want to bring up that Alex had said before that his first book, The Universe is a Dream, was really based on Gary Renard's Disappearance of the Universe. And I think DU, as it's called, really made a lot of difference to many people. I think it probably was one of the most influential books, and probably will become one of the most influential books in the future. He had mentioned something, and it may have been in a different book, that in 100 years he's going to open up his own book, and it'll be a while before it all comes together, but then he'll recognize the fact that he wrote it 100 years prior. Well, it goes back to, is time chronological? Is time happening all at once? I mean, the reality is there obviously is some chronological basis of time. We can see that when you see a plant grow. Clearly there was a yesterday and a today, but in the bigger picture it's all happening at once, which is also truly mind-blowing. And there's so many universes that are occurring at the same time,
mm-hmm.
with their own time frames, with their own little part of chronology that doesn't really exist but does assist.
Mm-hmm.
It really is something that I think you may feel like you need some sort of college professor to explain,
mm-hmm.
and Gary did it in one book.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I mean, the keys to the kingdom are in this book.
And what are the keys to the kingdom?
Many things. Forgiveness, but understanding that it's not about forgiving someone else, but more from a point of view of, this is my dream. I created that person. And why did I create that person? And who am I in relationship to that person? And who is that person in relationship to me? And who are we together? And who are we not? And back to the old oneness thing again, that it's just all these things happening around us are, it goes back to the separation.
Mm-hmm.
And
what does the separation mean?
The separation from God, and just the guilty feelings of separating from God, and being afraid and fear being introduced instead of love.
And that's that crazy mad idea.
Yeah. And all that stuff is just happening for us to just kind of, I think, to just kind of accept that there's this icky separation
mm-hmm.
that we created. And we is really just the whole greater mind, even though it seems like it's just me, or it's just you, or it's just Gary, or it's just whatever. We're really just all one, expressing the separation. And as soon as we can accept it and bless it and forgive it, then we can wake up in heaven.
One of the things Gary talked about, I'm pretty sure it was in the third book, Love Has Forgotten No One. He talks about how the script is already written.
Mm-hmm.
The script is written. Holy Spirit has made a decision on when each of us will basically wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can hasten that by forgiving and going through that process, or we can just kind of wait our turn. But the reality is we will all wake up.
Thank God.
It will all happen. But there was a really nice little explanation of how we are just looking at a projection. We're basically looking at a movie of ourselves that's already been recorded. So he happened to go to some Indian mound, I think in Missouri, if I'm not mistaken. His guides, Art and Impersa, told him, you're going to go there, and we're going to go with you, and you're going to experience it, but you're not going to remember this. In 6 months, you're going to go through the exact same thing, same mannerisms, same clothing, same cab driver. And you're going to understand, oh my gosh, it's all been recorded already, which is also mind-blowing, because I know from my spiritual journey early on, I always thought that I had free will, that I can just do whatever and determine however I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
There is a probability perspective here, but it's really only if we take forgiveness lessons and move forward. That's the only way that we can collapse time. And once we collapse time, things can change for us. But it's not, oh, I have this choice to make whether I take the left turn signal or the right turn signal. Right. The reality is it's already done. It's already recorded. Mm-hmm. That is so annoying to our ego because our ego wants to control everything.
Sure does.
I have here in a note something about collapsing time.
Oh yeah, this is a mind blower, and it was from the second book from Gary. Time wasn't something that was being done to me. It was being done by me. It wasn't coming at me. It was coming from me. This was a reversal of cause and effect.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, how often do we think we are victims of that which is happening to us? We are victims of the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know that common cliche, timing is everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is it's everything from us.
Yeah. And it was predetermined, correct, pre-written. And it was maybe done in that certain timing to add effect for us to wake up or something. But
I got to say, that was one of the things that I found slightly disturbing about reading this material, because I always believed I had a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a choice, but it's to forgive. And that's kind of it. That's my choice.
Right. That we turned away from God in the first place.
Right. And bringing the Alexander Marchand book up again, his third cartoon book, which is The Library of Time, he talked about a possible future alternative reality where if he had gone and not done some forgiveness lesson that he did, he wouldn't have reached or opened up the Course in Miracles until 2038.
Mm-hmm.
So it gave me an idea, now I'm starting to get it. The faster I can get to the point where I can start forgiveness lessons and getting this and slowing down my ego, the faster this stuff is going to come to me. There's no coincidence that you and I came to the Course in Miracles around the same time. It was our time.
Mm-hmm.
It was our time in the script. It could have been our time 20 years ago, possibly, if we had embraced it when it was first presented to us. But if we didn't, it could have been in 2050, for all I know.
Right.
So we've been working to the point where it became our time to be exposed to this. It'll be interesting to see how many forgiveness lessons that we have and how quickly or how slowly, I guess, we are able to embrace that and start collapsing those time vectors.
Yeah, I mean, every day there's a moment to forgive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking back earlier today when a friend of mine went to lunch and I had just read my lesson for the day. I was trying to find it. I don't know which one it was. But this crazy woman came out of her house and she was insane about us parking in front, which was a totally legal place to park because she was going to be leaving in a few minutes, and she lost it. And instead of just like going at it with her, which would have been maybe the normal thing to do, like, you're crazy lady, I'm parking here anyway, I just moved and parked on the other side of the street, and I just accepted that she was an example of just how crazy the mind can get and how easy it can pull me in to her drama, which definitely wasn't real, but just, you know, just like loving it and accepting it and knowing that she's innocent, and it's just another opportunity to forgive the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good example for listeners. We are always bombarded may be too strong of a word, but I think in our daily lives, there's stuff that happens. If we're in traffic, or if we're at a store and, you know, you have to wait in line and it seems like the cashier is taking forever, but, you know, you encountered something that you just kind of accepted it, it's okay, let it go, moved on, and didn't react. And that's kind of an advanced sign, I think. It's very easy when people are throwing out some very strong emotions and energy to kind of get wrapped up in that.
Yeah, and there's a heaviness to it and a stickiness to it. I mean, it definitely changed me, but it changed me to go read the course again, which just kept releasing it.
How did that resolve with the lady?
She just went back in her house.
She just went back in her house, okay.
Yeah.
So I wonder, so she was in your dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Character in your dream, kind of, I want to say gently, but maybe not so gently, kind of saying, okay, here's a little nudge.
Well, I think it's an example of how the ego could show up.
Absolutely.
And when I think of dying and being on the other side, and how in Gary's second book, he was saying most people can barely be there and that they jump back into the physical again, I wanted to get a taste of what that would be like now here, so that I could work through it, so that when I do physically die, I wouldn't have that reaction, and instead I could just
turn to Jesus.
Do you remember
and
why
the
he was saying that people, when they get over there, can't really handle it and they want to jump back in? Is it because the guilt that they are experiencing?
Yes, the guilt. It's the guilt. It's the overall guilt of the separation from God.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to jump back in. I'm not exactly a huge fan of third dimension, earthbound existence. I haven't enjoyed it, I may say.
Mm-hmm.
So I really feel like I'm committed to the course.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about this in the first podcast. Sometimes it sounds a little culty and a little weird, you know, mm-hmm. because when you hear some of these concepts, they're like, whoa. And even we have talked about this. Sometimes we're a little concerned coming out kind of openly talking about this. Living in a third dimension world where we have to have jobs at respectable companies, and there are people that just aren't going to understand it and may pass judgment unfairly. I guess any judgment is unfair, but
yeah, I wouldn't necessarily bring things up in everyday business conversation, like, oh well, none of this is real anyway, so it doesn't matter, like, because they wouldn't have the context for it. So I don't usually do that unless I'm maybe on a more personal level having lunch with someone, we're sharing something about our lives and they're talking about a struggle or something. And
have you noticed when you've brought it up what their reactions are? Are they usually open to it? Or
yeah, usually. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good to know. I like hearing that.
Yeah, when I was thinking about what it would be like to pass over and wanting to experience it here so that I could work through it, that's when Donnie showed up at the garden, which is an insane man who should have been on bipolar medication, and started taking apart my compost bins and building a home and threatening to hurt me by running after me and kicking our garden crew out of the garden.
What kind of garden is this for the listeners?
It was a nonprofit community garden that we grew food for the kitchen to feed the underserved.
Okay.
They'd make meals and things, and he decided that he didn't want us there anymore.
Mm.
And so the nonprofit was getting money from his estate, which I guess they didn't care about his quality of life because they were okay with him living in the dirt. But the fact that this huge ego with just total insanity, you know, like the weird voice, I'm going to come after you. You know, you're looking at me. You're talking to me. You're giving me the bad vibes and just really crazy stuff. Entering into something that I personally cared so much about, the garden, that I put a lot of time and money and training people and was successful at and enjoyed my gardening experience there until he showed up. But he showed up exactly when I was willing to have that experience of that darkest moment.
Mm.
And I feel like he really showed up that way for me. So I'm kind of grateful that I got to work through it, and I actually no longer garden there because I don't feel it's safe for me, and I had to come to some, you know, peace of letting go of the garden, but also knowing that he's innocent.
Right.
And that he's not in his right mind. And it's unfortunate that this mental health facility is not looking out for his mental health,
mm-hmm.
but just how, crazy the mind can show up. The ego mind is just really disturbed sometimes.
Right.
And wanting to keep sending love his way, that at some future point he can wake up.
So you cast Donnie in that role in your play.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is interesting. And we've talked about this before, and Gary had mentioned it in probably all three of his books, that there's no coincidence what goes on in our life. We are not victims in any way. We are not victims.
But there is a victimizer, ego-based, circle that goes around and around.
Sure,
and
on the ego level. I'm just talking about bigger picture. We're not victims.
Right.
But we cast these people and, we cast ourselves as either being a victim or a victimizer.
Yes.
And that's just the reality, unfortunately.
Yes. Yes.
So it's trying to break those bounds.
Yep.
I think you had talked about this before, and I really loved it, that we're all innocent. How hard is that when you're in an argument or some, like that lady, to remember, oh, they're innocent? That ain't easy. I mean, that's one of those mind techniques, at least for me, to separate myself and go, oh, they're innocent. It's okay.
Well, they don't have the information yet. And that's why I feel like Gary's books came in at a timely time, because without them, the course was not making sense to people. Mm-hmm. It was too confusing.
So God bless Jesus for sending Artin and Persa to come talk to him and to come out with those three books and more books to come, because it really did unlock the course.
I want to talk about the Jesus aspect for a second, because we both had talked about this previously, that we were kind of like, oh, Jesus, it's a little too religious. Mm-hmm. And Gary's book really brought Jesus back to us. Like, hey, this isn't that religious guy that we had no real affinity for or attraction to. And now we're like, oh, well, Jesus is just a cool dude.
Yeah, when I got that he didn't write the Bible, because I've just had such an aversion to the Bible, I haven't really read it.
Right.
I just knew I didn't like it profusely. I hated it and what it has done to the world and to people and to the ego mind and all the wars and just the religious wars. It just, you know that there's something off about it, no matter what religion and what their book is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, a couple weeks ago I referred to the course as my Bible.
Right.
And it's that in itself is kind of weird, because it's not a religion. It's a mind training. It's a new thought system.
I actually read the course on my Kindle, but obviously I have the big blue book, which I do refer to sometimes, but it almost is printed like a Bible. I mean, the pages are thin, and, you know, there's
the
definitely
paper,
similarities.
The font. Uh-huh.
Right. But going back to Jesus, in the third book of, I keep going back to Alexander Marchand because his Library of Time is the one I just most recently finished reading. But his second book, I think, is The Holy Planet. One of the things I really kind of was blown away by was the alien guide, her name was Zadiki, and he asked her, on the Holy Planet, have you heard of Jesus? And she said, well, yeah, I've heard of him. He seems like a decent fellow. And it was like, that's where I went, oh, now I get it. So Jesus was he's a big deal here on earth, but he was just one of many. And because we only see things through our own perspective and our own history, we tend to think Jesus, everybody would know Jesus. Well, maybe he's just one of, you know, a gazillion out there who are Jesus as well.
Yeah, it's just another split of the mind.
Right. I really appreciated that, because it put things in perspective for me. You know, it's weird. We all come across stuff that really hits us at a certain level that won't hit anybody else for whatever reason. But I remember reading that going, oh, now I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the simple things. But the second book, Holy Planet, and the third book, Library of Time, are the graphic novels. I think we talked about it. We have a review on the blog. We will talk about those in the future. I just appreciated the fact that it's Gary Renard who was the inspiration for those. It's Gary Renard who inspired us. You know, as we talked about Shirley MacLaine in her courageous kind of efforts to get her books into the mainstream, and people would make fun of them and all that kind of stuff. I think it takes a lot. And for Gary to come out with what he did for Disappearance of the Universe and have so many things change from that, because we were so late to that party, we weren't around when it broke, when that book went out and people started reading it for the first time. I'm kind of glad. I think ego takes its own form. And when it first came out, I think there may have been some back and forth and ego conversations about it. So it was better for us, I think, that we came in ignorant of any of that and just read it purely for what it was, and not looking at any false controversy that may have happened.
Yeah, he says in his book how he looked at the internet a lot at people's reviews of his book and how burned up he was getting, and how he wanted to fight back and to defend himself and write explanations, blah, blah, blah. But really, it's better probably not to look at any of it, because then you just get pulled into that drama, which is just making it all real.
So when I read some of this after the fact, I remember thinking, well, I was a little disappointed because, you know, I always like my idols to be pristine. But the reality is, he is. I was looking at it through the ego lenses again. We read stories from the Bible, or kind of like people talking about the Bible, of Jesus getting angry and overthrowing tables because people are gambling at some temple or something. who knows, right? But the reality is, nobody's perfect, but we all are perfect. And that's that weird dichotomy that happens. It's that duality that when I kind of broke my teeth in the spiritual world, I remember people talking about the holy duality and how important the yin and yang was. And the reality is, that's what's keeping us here.
Right.
Look at that.
Yeah.
I would see I Ching symbols and all this stuff, and it is all earthbound perception things.
Yeah, I mean, the wine, the cheese, the exercise, the physical body, mm-hmm. just like everything about this experience is, you know, not real, but it's in a 3D form.
I think when I am not feeling well, when I have a headache or, you know, I bruise myself, to me, it's kind of like, it's so easy to go, obviously, I'm in the third dimension. I'm a physical being, which, okay, from a scientific perspective, we are. We can see that we are because we're seeing through eyes that are third dimension and physical. Mm-hmm. But the reality is we're just a construct of our mind, and that was a little mind-blowing in the beginning, not to be redundant. Gary was saying we had went to a talk that Gary had, I think, in February of 2013 at a bookstore locally here in Los Angeles, and he had given us a story about... He went through the Cincinnati airport. I'm from there, so I can visualize that in my mind. And he fell down the escalator. And in doing so, he actually cut up his face. And so he was really bloody. But he was saying the interesting thing is he didn't feel a thing. And I had read this in his book, I think the second one maybe, that once you get to a certain point of mastery, you don't feel pain because pain exists in your mind. Mm-hmm. It does not exist in your body. You can't tell a doctor that.
Well, I wonder. I mean, it exists in the body, but it's coming from the ego mind.
It
the pain. If the pain is real, it's from the ego mind. I mean, there's
correct, right? Yeah. You're right. So Gary was saying, you know, he didn't feel a thing because his mind isn't in pain.
Yeah.
Right. So
super
it,
cool.
And it blew the airport, I guess, medical staff away because he said he looked at his face and he was all bloody. He's like, well, this is kind of cool. And they're like, oh, my God, you're bleeding. We need to, you know, and he wasn't affected by that. It's wow. stuff like, it's those stories I really appreciate. Like, okay, now I get it. This is a real world person having this extraordinary experience. Mm-hmm. And the people around them going, what do you mean? Your mm-hmm. face is all bloody. And, you know, you should be whatever. And he's like, I'm cool. And I think he said something about he healed pretty quickly after that. So I think the physical manifestation of being kind of transcendent in that way is really amazing.
Yeah, it'd be great to not feel pain. I mean, usually when I get sick, I ask myself, why am I sick?
Well, you have some sort of strange affection for spontaneous combustion, which I was talking to my sister earlier today, and I really do appreciate that because nobody wants to have these long illnesses. Wouldn't it be nice if when we're ready, we just spontaneously combust? It's not great for the cleaning crew, but, you know, it's a very efficient way of moving, and we are lucky enough to be very close to the Paramahansa Yogananda Lake Shrine, and there is a museum, I guess, of artifacts that Yogananda had in his possession. And there's also a picture of him right before he passed. He was at a dinner and he was talking and basically just shut his eyes quietly and he was gone.
At the dinner?
I can't remember if it was at the dinner or it was after the dinner, but I remember reading that and going, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
You know, just close your eyes and exit.
I love it.
I know. So it's kind of like, it's one of my goals, people, is to get mastery to the sense that I could just be here chatting on this podcast and yeah. then my mic will go quiet.
Yeah. They said in the future when Artin and Persa or whatever they are married that they lay the body aside.
Yes. I love that concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. And I think Persa was ill for 2 days. There was an illness for 2 days, but I like the fact that she was ascended or awakened for 11 years in body.
Mm-hmm.
11. Can you imagine what it's like to be an ascended master on earth for 11 years? And also once you're ascended, you can't be unascended. I love
Yay!
That. Like, once you're done, you're done. I mean, you don't backslide. You're
awake,
just, you're good.
You're awake.
So for 11 years, she wasn't bothered by traffic or anything.
Wow.
And I may have mentioned previously an anecdote that Gary Renard had mentioned in one of his audio talk. It wasn't a book. I think he was giving a talk at a conference. And he had mentioned being in a car with John Mundy, I think. And they were going down a highway and the transmission blew or something. And cars were speeding by. It was a pretty hectic kind of moment. And Gary was in the passenger seat and was kind of freaking out about it. And he looked over to John and he was completely calm, completely calm. That would be a lovely experience to not let things like that get to you.
Sure.
To be as accepting and calm as possible. I'm not there yet. I admit that. But I'm also fascinated to hear people who've been doing the course for a while, how they are. Like, how are they in dealing with work situations? I'm assuming their work situations wouldn't be volatile because they're able to kind of control it more because it's all coming from us. But also how they kind of carry themselves, their comportment. How are they seeing the world? I also, for some reason, I equate people who are very spiritual with being calm and quiet and move slowly. I don't know why I think that. I mean, I haven't been around too many of these ascended masters. I don't know, I've never been to anyone, although I may know one in the future. It would be nice, though, to... I would like it if we come across an ascended master and it's blinking in their chest, I'm an ascended master. So there's no question about it.
I would like it if we could become ascended masters.
Which I believe we will. It would just be nice, I've said this before, that I would really like to find kind of a mentor that when I'm having a bad day or I cannot get out of my headspace, I can go to that person and say, help me, Yogi, what do I do?
I just turn to the course whenever I'm having an off moment because there's always an answer there.
So when you go to the course and you read that, do you then do a mind shift? What happens?
Yeah, I'd say so. You know, usually there's something to give up. It kind of goes back to my landmark training, which is what's going on? Why is it going on? What do I have to gain from it? You know, how does this other person or situation fit in to what am I supposed to get?
So what is landmark? Because Gary mentioned it briefly in one of his books.
It's a self-study program. Mm-hmm. There's a foundation course called the Forum. Mm-hmm. That's 3 days and one night. And it's the best thing I've ever done. It comes with a 10-week seminar series afterwards, and it ranges in price from city to city. At this point, it's probably around $400 to $500 in a major city to do that program.
That's still reasonable.
Well, given all the therapy I've done and how much it costs to see a therapist, your money's definitely more well spent doing the Landmark Forum.
So I think Gary had mentioned was one of his books that the origin and one of the things he got into first was Est.
Yes.
And then from Est, I think it was sold to those who were doing Landmark.
The man who started, Werner Erhard, who started Est, had a brother, and his mm-hmm. brother continued on.
I see, okay.
And that was Landmark.
Okay, and Landmark continues on now, so
sure does.
People who are listening to this can look up, is it landmark.com?
Landmark Education.
Landmark Education.
Mm-hmm.
To find a little more about this, Gary spoke highly of it, so, and I think someone else had mentioned it, it was a gentle kind of...
I don't know about gentle. It's kind of a masculine point of view. Looking at
the
world.
So it's more action and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like my words create my world and who am I being? And, you know, it's usually for people who are up to something in life that have programs going on that are creating.
But it's not spiritual?
No, in a way, it's not spiritual. I mean, they don't want to be called spiritual. It's more about what the study of what it is to be human.
I see.
Being on the planet right now.
I'm trying to think that gentleman who, Tony Robbins, did he go through Landmark?
I honestly don't know. Yeah. I mean, I've done some Tony Robbins too.
Yeah, I mean, I love Tony Robbins. I think he was a pretty big influence for me. I think he's great. A lot of people have... Whatever.
It's all on the journey. I mean, it all helps to now.
I think it really just depends on what we're open to at a certain time. I mean, anybody can give you a book and say, this is the best book I've ever read, and you might not be open to it mm-hmm. at that moment. It doesn't mean the book's bad. It's just you're not ready to read it.
Exactly.
You know, or it's just not your preference. I mean, I have books that come to me and I'll read a couple chapters and there may not be enough for me to stay interested, or I'm just easily distracted or whatever. It's nothing to do with the material. It really depends on what I'm able to take in at that time.
Yeah, any kind of book that can blow my mind and help me understand how the universe works mm-hmm. and why we're here is what I want to know.
And the other thing is, we've talked about this before. Obviously, we've only been around the course for a little over a year. We're still really hungry with it. Fascinated by the information out there. Fascinated to learn more about it. But we're also a little picky, I think, in what we're taking in and in what books we are reading. You had mentioned before you're really only interested in the course and course materials at this point.
Correct. I just want to stay as close to the original material to get the most out of it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I go on Amazon and I check to see, well, what course books are available. And I've read and I've downloaded a number of them that are course related that don't necessarily get me. You know, there's not enough for me to go, oh, okay, that's great. Nothing against this author. It's amazing you were able to publish. But I really do look for a particular kind of book. I think that we called it the cartoon book, that Alexander Marchand Universe is Just a Dream, really had that hook a lot. It was enough for me to go, okay, let me see his next book and next book. Mm-hmm. I think the next one I'm going to read is Where's My Jesus Fish, which is basically A Course in Miracles told from a humorous perspective. It's co-written, I believe, by Gary. Mike Lemieux, I believe, is the author. I've been reading a lot about that. So I'm fascinated to see what that's about. I'm a huge fan of anything humor related. If they could do a humor book, a comedy book on The Course in Miracles, I would just eat that up. I would read that over and over again, just because I find humor such a joy. So Gary has humor in his books. We talked about it before. Humor has its own preferences for people. I like the fact that he does intersperse it sometimes. I've actually used a couple of his jokes at work, by the way. Thank you, Gary Renard. I should have given you credit. I will next time. Whenever I do out-of-office messages, I try to put a joke in there. I've been using some of his just because I'm reading his stuff so much that it's sort of like top of mind.
Yeah, I think it helps break down the barrier and connect people.
Mm-hmm. So wrapping this up, do you have any kind of closing comments about Gary Renard, his books, or anything that you want to give advice to our listeners?
My key advice is to actually read the book.
Okay.
Like, it's great to have the audio version, but it's not the whole message. You got to read the whole book.
Are you talking about Gary's book? Or
Gary's book.
Course in Miracles. Okay.
And to, you know, take your time with it. Like, I had to reread some paragraphs sometimes, 4 or 5 times or more, to really understand it. Because it's sometimes written from, it seems like a backward point of view. And when they use negatives, like less, right, painless, guiltless, less, mm-hmm, or whatever, it's forcing you to slow down and to think about it.
No, I agree. We have taken notes on our digital devices when we read this stuff, because there are times when it's so mind-blowing, you're like, hold on, I got to write that down again.
Yeah, I tend to write notes about how it applies to my own life, an experience that happens.
Actually, that's a good idea. I should do that.
Yeah.
Because it makes it more real. Well, real.
It helps understand it and ground it.
True. Yeah, because some of this stuff is pretty highfalutin.
Yeah, applying it to the real world,
mm-hmm,
and which then, isn't real.
That's what's so strange. It's like walking that tightrope between the real world and the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're so used to seeing it in one way, but it's like forcing our brain to see it in a different way.
It's a muscle. It's just like, mm-hmm, exercise. The more you do it, the more
mental gymnastics
you get a strength in it.
And what do you have to say to our listeners about the Course in Miracles audio?
I love it. I've just listened to the text part. I haven't, mm-hmm, listened to the study lessons or the teacher's thing, because, mm-hmm, I think there's a different reader on the teacher's part. And he talks a lot faster.
There is,
like,
yes,
the pacing's different from, mm-hmm, my being, and I can't go there right now.
There's a Manifold Teachers. There is, I think it's called the Psych, the one on psychology and psychiatry or something. There's a Song of Prayer, and I can't remember what the other one was, but there are these other ones. We've been focusing really on just the course text.
I don't even know where to find them, mm-hmm, on the audiobook.
Oh.
So,
and I can't remember if I've downloaded them separately or not. I may have.
But the audiobook's pretty long.
Yeah, it is.
It's like 8 hours per book, and there's 3 of them, so it's like 24 hours probably.
And after a while, if you listen to it, you know, not only do you start getting entrained to what they're saying, you get so used to it that you're like, oh, I want to hear it again.
Yeah, it does start to drone on, though, sometimes, mm-hmm, where I have to mix in music.
Yeah, it tends to start sounding similar.
Yeah.
To the thing you just listened to 2 hours prior.
Well, that's because at some point, I don't remember, I think it was in Gary's books, it said that the course is actually in the first 20 pages, and it just repeats over in a different version throughout the rest of the book.
And because Jesus kind of downloaded this Talon Shookman in Shakespearean kind of verse, it's not immediately accessible to us to read. I think, generally speaking, it's easier for us to read narrative, a story. And this is less story-like. It's more, to me, it's more like a school manual.
Yeah, I just imagine it's Jesus talking to me.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Jesus, whatever you say. I'm all for it.
I want to be a part of the Jesus underground.
That's right. It'll be interesting to, I guess, hopefully we won't be around, how long this book is going to, I'm assuming it's going to be popular in perpetuity. I think Gary mentions in the future it will gain more and more attention.
In 100 years,
it says. In 100 years, yeah. And I think that's around the time that Arnim Persa will be in flesh.
Maybe we'll be back then, too.
Maybe we'll be back then, too. Maybe we'll be next door to them.
Maybe so.
You never know. All right. Thank you, listeners. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully you learned a little about our experience with Disappearance of the Universe. Please check out our blog at thecourseofcourse.blogspot.com. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.